Hello, and welcome to episode number 80 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Generally speaking, with this podcast, each episode takes a different topic pertaining to the UFO phenomenon and general paranormality and does a deep dive into it. That being the case, for the most part, Point of Convergence is not a current affairs kind of show. My aim is to make each episode relevant regardless of when and where any particular listener happens to access and consume it. That said, recent events are such that I think that on this particular occasion, it makes sense to veer from that overarching strategy. And that's because, simply put, I believe we are living through truly extraordinary times, times that speak to a key inflection point in the history of our civilization. While even our current era is the product of events that have been unfolding for decades now pertaining to the UFO phenomenon, I believe evidence suggests this particular period of the 2020s is particularly significant. Now, even as I speak those words, I'm aware of how problematic such statements can turn out to be. Having explored various religious and spiritual circles in great depth, both personally and academically, over the decades of my life, I've personally seen how many times various prognosticators have declared that a particular time was of special import for the future of our civilization and the fate of the world, no less, only to see various predictions and so-called prophecies tied to these prognostications fail to materialize time and time again. Now, certainly, our current state of affairs as it pertains to the UFO phenomenon is undoubtedly built upon decisions and actions made over the course of getting on for 100 years now. But still, I see those decisions and actions coming to a head at this particular period in our history. As the saying goes, history repeats itself until it doesn't. While we can be bludgeoned into disinterest and apathy by the sheer repetition of certain themes over and over again, that historical trend is no guarantee that events will always proceed as they have done before. Indeed, at some point, any and every historical trend comes to an end. I believe we're nearing one of those key inflection points now. But who and what is behind this shift? Is it one party or many? Are they human or non-human? How can we be sure that this is not just some kind of government psyop that will ultimately be revealed as another iteration of the same old, same old? And if something significant really is on the cusp of being revealed, how is it going to manifest, and in what kind of frame of time? These are the matters, both essential and particularly timely, that we'll seek to engage with in this, the 80th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. I'd like to begin this week's episode by announcing that I'm happy to say that I will be one of the speakers at the 2023 Ohio UFO Heritage Conference, which will be held at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Yes, indeed, at Hope Hotel at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and this will be on May 5th and 6th, the 2023 Ohio UFO Heritage Conference. Happy to say that I'm one of the speakers involved in that event, along with people like James Fox, Diana Pasulka, Bryce Sabol, Michael Masters, Michael Hanks, Kelly Chase, and J. Christopher King. So I hope to see some of you there in May. Now, moving on to today's topic. As I said in the introduction, normally I don't key in on current events on this podcast because I want the episodes to be relevant regardless of when people access and consume them. I don't want to date the episodes. But this week I am discussing recent events because I think it's important to record these events as they happen because I believe we're in the middle of an inflection point in history. Now, I would have myself considered these details outlandish, even preposterous, probably only a couple of years ago. Let me make that clear. But such is the nature of the beast when you're researching the UFO phenomenon, and when, very importantly, a non-human intelligence or a group of them is guiding that process, not just for me individually, but for us as a species. And I really think that is the case. That's one of the key takeaways here. Now, the bizarre ride that this podcast journey has been part and parcel with this unfolding journey with both human and non-human and non-conventionally human intelligences. We'll get to that in this episode. Now, Much of this will sound outlandish, preposterous to some people. Again, depending on your background, depending how much you're coming from a nuts and bolts perspective or not. But let me say this. Much of what I'll be talking about today is hiding in plain sight. In other words, there are places you can go, books you can read, historical documents you can unearth that speak to these very matters. It's really about knowing which specific bits of information you need to access and how it all fits together. Because, of course, another challenge is that often this information that's valid and essential even is mixed in with misinformation or misguided information / details. And historically, of course, that has been by design to basically exhaust people who are trying to unearth the truth, because even when they come across truthful details, they also come across things that are make-believe or things that are blatantly false or are meant to misdirect. This is the nature of the beast in an ongoing, overarching intelligence kind of operation. And very importantly, I would point out to you here that that intelligence operation that this ultimately is about has been conducted both by human and non-human and non-conventionally human parties. Again, we'll get to some of the details a little bit later. Now, in regards to the kinds of details I'm going to discuss today, and in regards to the kinds of threads that have been developing over time, over the last several months at least, going well back into last year, people often ask me where I'm getting this information from. Is this coming from official channels or people that are well plugged into official channels? Or is it perhaps coming from non-conventional sources? And of course, when they say non-conventional, they mean basically alien intelligences or perhaps your higher self or some interdimensional kind of source. Again, they could mean various things by that, but they often phrase it with a term like non-conventional to basically include everything but traditional human means. And my answer to that question is both and. That's been part of the process. Both kinds of sources have been in play here, and not just for me, importantly, but for people I'm plugged in with as well. So I have various colleagues and friends around the world who are involved in this topic, who are part of something that seems to be happening, some overarching enterprise that's being controlled by something much larger than us. That said, something I would add here is that when we have obtained information from non-conventional sources, meaning non-human and non-conventionally human sources, and I'll give you a clue there. When I say non-conventionally, I mean humans that perhaps are from the future or beings from our future that have elements of our DNA in them, but they've also become much more than that at this point. Now, the key is that information that's been provided by these beings has been corroborated by further research we've done into, for instance, 20th century history. And as I pointed out both here on Point of Convergence as well as on Liminal Frames, the other podcast I'm a part of, this has also been aided by artificial intelligence, algorithms that are able to dig deeply into 20th century history after much of that history has been documented, collated, digitized as part of an ongoing effort to reconstruct what really happened during the 20th century, which again, I'll point out to you, is quite different than what we've been told and taught about 20th century history. Now, let me provide some further context in regards to what I want to discuss today. Some of what I've become privy to is via sources and connections that I either can't or don't want to address specifically at this point. But as I say, much of the major thrust of what I've become aware of in terms of the overarching dynamics in play is laying in plain sight, if you know where to look. That's the key. So instead of addressing these sources directly, I'm going to refer you to some plain of sight information that's already in the public sphere that you can access to confirm some of these things, or at least to learn about them. But just to be clear, in regards to these in plain sight resources I'm going to refer you to, I'm not relying on their merits alone. For instance, in the Rachel's Eyes episode I did, that we'll also touch on in this episode, by the way, we discuss some elements that some people would consider outlandish, too far-fetched. But again, the point here is that I've come across corroborating details, corroborating evidence for the claims made in books like Rachel's Eyes. So that's key. I'm going to refer you to and mention some in plain sight resources, but that's not all I'm relying on when I make my own conclusions about what's going on. Just want to make that point. Now, let's move on to some key aspects of what we're going to discuss today. And again, I'm going to refer to some things I've already talked about And what we'll do today is kind of piece it together into a larger overarching narrative. Okay, so the first thread I want to bring to your attention is information I discussed in the three episodes I did last year on what Michael Masters calls extratempestrials. In other words, beings that are not from our time. Now again, according to Mike Masters' perspective, these could very well be beings who are us from the future. They are extratempestrial because they're outside of time, not necessarily beyond our space. Of course, the Earth will be in a different position in the future, but the point there is really focused on time. That from an evolutionary perspective, they look different than us because they've pursued a longer trajectory than us, but ultimately they are us from the future, our progeny, basically. Now, I'll just quickly point out here that I think there's some question about how much they are just us from the future. I think it's probably more than that. I've seen evidence to suggest that that's a component of who they are, that they have some of our DNA in them, but I think more than that is in play. So we don't need to focus so much on the fact that they are fully us from the future or not. They are in some way connected to us in terms of our DNA. And I think it's accurate to say in some way that they are from our future. Although I'll just point out that this gets tricky. I found as I've researched this and have dealt with some of the sources I've dealt with, because the way they interact with time is different than us. I think part of the confusion and complexity here is that our conventional understanding of how time works as a linear kind of rolling out is not really how it works. And so that confuses things here. And even when we talk about these extratempestrials, if you want to call them that, they're still not exactly just us from the future. I think that's part of it in play. And yes, our perception of what is past, present, and future plays into this. But just keep in mind that I think one of the lessons here is that time isn't quite what we think it is. And of course, that means space too, because that's one integrated fabric, space-time. Again, part of the complexity here, but in some sense, they are connected to us and they are from what we perceive as the future, although they can move through time in ways that we cannot, at least not yet. And by the way, for those of you who would like to go back and listen to those episodes, and if you haven't heard them, I'd recommend you do because we go into it in quite a lot of detail. That would be episodes 46, 47, and 48 from last year, where I discussed this notion. This notion that these beings that look like what we consider gray aliens are also connected to us in some way, but they are emerging from our future in some way as well, although again, they can move across time. Now, importantly, in that series of episodes, I discuss some key intelligence that also has arisen pertaining to these beings. So in other words, this is much more than just a hypothesis that Michael Masters has done a great job in developing based on his understanding in evolutionary biology, but also that we have intelligence circles, intelligence sources, who are speaking to what these beings are up to, why they're here, why now, and to what end. Now, in terms of sources, if you remember, in those three episodes, I had two key sources. Australian journalist Ross Coulthart has spoken about his information he's received from sources he has inside U.S. intelligence that spoke to these matters. While doing research for those three episodes, I also talked with former British intelligence analyst Frank Milburn, and he also provided some excellent information, some revealing information that he also obtained from key sources in intelligence circles. Now, what both of these people that spoke to me, who had independent sources, spoke to was this notion of there being two factions of others, two key factions. Again, the UFO phenomenon is a plurality. There are numerous beings involved with different kinds of agendas. But what we're going to focus on today, like we did in those three episodes, is around two key factions of others, two key factions of beings that you might consider alien, although again, they have DNA in common with us. Let's remember that. But the information coming from these sources was that these two factions are here to try to change the future, as it were. In other words, to try to alter our timeline, what is going to roll out for us as a species. Now again, according to this information, one of those factions is here to try to prevent something from happening, something that has been referred to as a kind of cataclysm or apocalypse. Now we have different kinds of ideas about what that might mean. I'll get to that a little bit later. But again, the notion is one of these groups is here to try to prevent this cataclysm from happening. and they are working with people on the inside in terms of intelligence circles, governmental circles, even military circles, to try to bring about events that would prevent this from happening. On the other end of the spectrum, there's another faction of these others, not necessarily a different type, sometimes they're the same type, but aligned with a different agenda in terms of this cataclysm. In other words, they do want it to happen. Now, again, there's different reasons why that might be the case, and I've had some further clarity on why that would be as compared to when I talked about it last year. But again, the key to just focus in on here is there's two factions, not necessarily two different types. There are some different types involved, but it's not so much about one type being on one side and a different type being on the other side. There's some mixing of the types there. But one of these factions definitely wants this to happen, and the other one doesn't. And there's kind of a chess game going on right now in terms of what will play out based on the interaction of these different others with us as these different agendas play out in terms of the dynamics in real time in our space-time as we speak. Now, moving on to the next puzzle piece that plays into this overarching narrative that I want to bring to your attention. Again, just to remind you, I'm referring to information that's in plain sight that you can find, that you can access. But I'm not just relying on these sources. I have other sources that corroborate the information you find in these sources I am bringing your attention to. The next one is this book, Rachel's Eyes, that we discussed last time on Point of Convergence. Now, if you remember, that book speaks to coordination and cooperation between human governments, especially elements within the American military-industrial complex, and various alien and non-conventionally human groups. And when I say non-conventionally human, I hope by now you know what I mean. I'm speaking about time there and differences in terms of how they appear then as opposed to now and having some of our DNA and being in some ways related to us. Now, that book also hinted at the notion that different groups of aliens exist within a larger organizational structure, even if their individual group agendas do sometimes differ, and sometimes quite dramatically. And if you remember from last time's podcast, when I discussed Rachel's Eyes in detail, there's also a notion in that book that is supposedly representing history and actual events and real places and people that existed. There was also discussion of vast underground bases in places you might consider the usual suspects, like the American Southwest, but bases in slightly different places than people are used to, like S4, for instance, where there are a vast array of these underground tunnels and interconnected bases. But what's going on there is cooperation, experiments, and the development of technology where both humans and aliens are working together, and sometimes on a long-term basis. And in addition to that, remember, this part of the country is also used as a kind of hub for craft that are coming in both interstellarly and also interdimensionally, and that some beings come in for a short time, some stay for longer periods of time, and sometimes are part of ongoing experimentation that's going on in cooperation with elements of the military-industrial complex. Of course, as part of that, we also talked about there being an agreement, a treaty with human governments, specifically around the era of the Eisenhower administration, that allowed for, basically agreed to, a certain contingent of this Galactic Federation, a certain group of Greys, basically, to abduct human beings, to abduct American citizens, and this would be as part of a hybridization program and ongoing genetic experimentation, and that the government, or at least elements of the government in the form of the military-industrial complex and connections to it, agreed to these treaties, and that there was even some sort of notion of a quota around how many people could be abducted, and that while this was going on, the military-industrial complex would work towards distracting the general public from this reality. They would basically make people skeptical of the notion, and they would basically undermine any kind of human sources that were discussing this and saying it was a reality. They would agree to this quota, in other words, and also distract the public from what was going on, suppress it basically, in exchange for technology that would give the American industrial complex massive superiority technologically over any other nation state, and probably for centuries to come. Okay, enough about Rachel's Eyes and the kind of realities that I think points to. Now I want to discuss a third puzzle piece. This has to do with the raw material, also known as the Law of One. Now, here I want to discuss the metaphysical backdrop for all of what's been going on. Now, I haven't done an episode specifically on the raw material yet, although I have alluded to it. I will do probably several episodes dedicated to this material in the future. And as I've said on numerous podcasts now, I think this is the best channeled material we've ever received. I think it really does speak to the metaphysical backdrop. It speaks to what's really going on the biggest stage, not just in this lifetime, but across lifetimes and across civilizations and across different kinds of iterations when we take on the forms of different kinds of beings. Now, again, also I would point out here, if you have a hard time with channeled material, if that feels like a stretch to you, you need to recalculate, you need to reconsider. This is a major way of obtaining information, not just for individuals and private interests, but governments have done this as well and are ongoingly doing this. So again, if this is a stretch for you, the notion that channeling is real, a legitimate source of gaining information, you need to reconsider and quickly. Okay, so in the raw material, one of the things that comes up is that death is not the end, but is rather just the transitioning between different iterations. And importantly, depending on your level of consciousness development, it also presents, death does, the opportunity to transition to a different dimension of reality altogether. And some of these beings we're interacting with, some of these different civilizations, are working on a different dimensional reality. In other words, they're operating with a kind of reality that operates differently than the one that we work in, because reality is actually an interplay between consciousness and what seems like physical reality. Now, civilizations come and go. This is also something that should be noted. But this is not by accident, but actually according to a cosmic balancing of interests that are geared towards the greatest good. Okay, so we need to expand our understanding of what the greatest good here is. It's not just for us as individuals or our family or our nation state or our civilization or even our planet in total, us beings as well as animals and the earth itself, but across the spectrum of, for instance, a galactic arm or more than that, these different galactic federations basically balance the free will interest and the greater good amongst all of those players. So as you can imagine, it gets quite complex, but that's what goes on there. But importantly, when a civilization ends or when some sort of cataclysmic event happens that effectively ends that civilization, it's not accidental that there are metaphysical principles behind this, and that when those things happen, it's because there's a shuffling of the deck going on. But even then, again, for the greatest good. And remember, individual consciousnesses will reiterate, either in the same kind of form or in a different form altogether, and they will be moved around into different contexts based on their level of consciousness development. So in other words, even if a civilization was wiped out, or even if someone just died, for instance, they might come back cycling in the same kind of dimensional construct as they were already in because they still have the same lessons to learn. Or if they've developed sufficiently, then they have the opportunity to ascend to a different kind of reality construct. And that's what you hear about when experiencer groups talk about ascension to 4D or 5D. That's what they're talking about. So that speaks to the metaphysical architecture, the overarching metaphysical reality that basically enfolds what we perceive as our lives, our civilization, our physical reality even. So keep that all in mind. So again, just to reiterate here, from today's perspective, we've discussed three different key puzzle pieces that I have found speak to other sources I've found that corroborate these sources and show how they stitch together. So we have the notion of these extratempestrials, or these beings that seem to be from the future in some fashion as we perceive it, and have some connection to us, even in terms of genetic connection, but are quite different and look more like what you would perceive as a gray alien or some variation thereof. We have that piece, that are here around some sort of potential coming cataclysm and working on different sides of the equation, one having an agenda where this would happen, the other having the agenda where this wouldn't happen. Then we have the notion from Rachel's eyes that there's been ongoing cooperation between the military-industrial complex and a group or groups from within a larger confederation structure, and that this has involved not just re-engineering of alien tech, but also alien tech delivered to the military-industrial complex in exchange for the ongoing hybridization efforts that some of these groups are involved with, and the hiding of this from the general public. Okay, so keep that in mind. And then finally, the third piece is this raw material, the law of one. By the way, I want to spell it out because some people keep thinking I'm saying raw as in R-A-W. I'm not. It's raw as in R-A, as in the raw group known about in ancient Egypt. So the raw material or the raw contact, the law of one material, you can find those books either on Amazon, or they also actually publish all of those channeling sessions for free on the Law of One website. But keep in mind all of those things, right? The raw material speaks to the overarching architecture. Rachel's Eye speaks to hybrids that are here and ongoing interplanetary agreements that are in place. And then, of course, my three episodes on extratempestrials, or these beings that have come from what we perceive as our future around this coming major event of some sort or another. Okay, that gives us some context for what we're going to talk about next. And of course, I began this episode talking about recent events, current affairs, and how I think that they're particularly significant. So what have we seen with recent events? Well, recently, we've seen a flurry of reports regarding objects high in our skies in various parts of the world that seem to be operating with impunity in regards to the usual nation-state borders, at least until they're quote-unquote shot down, right? Now, let me begin by saying all is not as it seems here. The flurry of reports coming out reflect both reality and unreality. And what I mean by that is that some of this is tied to new objects in the sky, and some of it has to do with an operation designed to prime people so they become familiar with this notion of identifying and then intercepting, in one way or another, these apparently anomalous objects. Now, some of the objects will be identified. Others will be left as mysteries in some way, so as to creep open in people's minds the notion that something else, beyond terrestrial tech, may be operating in the skies around our planet. And again, all of the nuances I just mentioned are by design. So, with this in mind, it's fair to say that what we're beholding is indeed, in some way, a kind of psyop. It's a purposeful psychological operation, in other words, aimed at the masses. However, what is intended is what's key here. This time around, it's a preparatory operation, not an end in itself, like historical psyops were, whose only purpose was to distract and obfuscate in order to steer people away from the deeper hidden truths. That's what the psyops used to be about. This time around, the psyop is designed to prepare them for these deeper hidden truths. After all the hoopla about incursions by these various aerial objects, it's interesting to note where this has all landed, no pun intended. Let's consider this headline from the New York Times. Quote, U.S. calls off search for unidentified objects it shot down. And then the subtitle reads, the end of the search for objects downed over Alaska and Lake Huron raises the possibility that the devices will never be collected and analyzed, unquote. Now, where does this leave us? If this is a psyop, but one of a different nature this time around, how does such a headline impact the populace, even if mostly on a subconscious level? Again, I would suggest to you that it leaves the door cracked open, even if on a largely subconscious level, again. Now, what has also happened recently is the number of historical mentions of the words UFO and UAP went up almost exponentially over the last week or week and a half. In addition, the term phenomenon, long known to us intimately familiar with this topic, was also introduced to the masses over the last couple of weeks by politicians at the highest level, and not in a snarky, snickery kind of way either. This is not something to dismiss lightly. I will suggest to you that this is all very much by design. NLP is in play here, neuro-linguistic programming, the use of words in a special order, presented in certain kinds of scenarios by official players in such a way as to normalize something, normalize an overarching narrative that can be developed further later on. It's basically like a fire drill. It normalizes the process so that when a fire actually occurs, the kids are ready to deal with it because it's not this shock it would have been if there had been no preparation. Keep that in mind. Okay, let's state some facts. Again, the UFO phenomenon is an amalgam of many different actors and agendas. I've been saying that on Point of Convergence for quite some time now. That said, one particular subset of the overall phenomenon has emerged more clearly over the last year or so, and activities in that sector have been increasing almost to a fever pitch. And again, this speaks to the two factions around this coming event. What does this all point to? What is the nature of the reality behind all of this? Well, this is not just about aliens visiting, long existing, or active in human affairs. But this also involves the development of legacy programs that have developed tech based on crash retrievals and accord/treaties made with groups of non-human intelligences. Please remember my reference to the kinds of arrangements discussed in a book like Rachel's Eyes, a book that also discusses alien-human hybrids, of course, which will also be important in the future. Now, another key aspect here is that it's not just that there's factions with these others. Again, two main factions in this one particular aspect of the overarching UFO phenomenon that have different agendas as it pertains to this coming event. There is also factioning within government. That's important to keep in mind. And also that these two are not completely distinct. In other words, some of the factioning we see with the others is also represented with factioning in the military-industrial complex and governmental structures in our world altogether. It's also important to keep in mind that this is a dynamic situation, but historic events are in play right now. Some of what will come to light is our own reverse-engineered tech. That involves things like anti-gravity, reverse-engineered anti-gravity tech. Also, things like free energy, like zero point, is also in play here. Again, we've heard about these things. This has been in the fringes, right? Again, in plain sight. There are books, there are resources, there are podcasts historically that have spoken to these notions. And I'm saying to you that this is a real thing. This is technology that's been developed in our world in cooperation with human beings and non-human groups. And that different aspects of elements of the military-industrial complex have achieved these kinds of technology. Now, in terms of recent events and this hoopla around objects in our skies and us shooting them down, part of this is about letting government save face in a rollout to prevent public panic when something comes later to our realization. Again, the key here is that there's a narrative being set up here. This is an intelligence operation, a mass intelligence operation, a psyop of the largest scale, whose design is intended to prepare us for some sort of major revelation. Again, hence the inflection point for our civilization. Now again, numerous factors are in play. Don't forget, whistleblowers are testifying before Congress as we speak, and much of this has already happened. And importantly, this is working. This process is exposing some of the true history of the 20th century, including history regarding crash retrieval programs, in a shocking manner, by the way, to those conducting the events. Okay, so now I want to move on to a part of the episode where I reference different statements I've made on social media over the last 4 or 5 days. Again, this is a fluid situation. Things are happening quickly. I've been responding in real time. Now I want to discuss some of those things I've said on social media and then expound on them and talk about how they fit together based on what we just talked about. One of the things I said was, quote, "The left hand of government is recognizing that, constitutional norms be damned, the right hand is not coming clean and is often willfully stonewalling, suppressing, and preventing not only the reporting, but even the gathering of relevant data pertaining to the UFO phenomenon," unquote. Again, that's something I wrote earlier this week. And this was in reference to something that Ross Coulthart had talked about. I want to quote something here. Ross Coulthart suggests that a senior commander of the U.S. Navy went to the Biden White House and has accused the U.S. Air Force of hiding UFO information that has created an overall weakness in U.S. defense. That's what one of the headlines on social media read, and I just want to point out that this is key. So much of this entire disclosure topic revolves around the U.S. Air Force, and not just because of the implications for U.S. defense. Think back to those accords that were made, those agreements that were made, that exchange of tech and things like that. Much of that has to do with the Air Force. Pay attention for those who have ears to hear. Now let me quote another tweet that I made this past week. I said, "The turning of the tide continues. Keep watching, more to come." And that was in reference to this headline, breaking from Washington. President Joe Biden plans to deliver his most extended public remarks yet as early as Thursday about the unidentified objects that the U.S. military has been shooting down, three people familiar with the matter said. Unquote. This is for NBC News, by the way. Now again, think about that headline. We have reference to President Joe Biden delivering extended public remarks about unidentified objects that the U.S. military has been shooting down. Think about this in terms of a psyop. Think about all the terms, the notions that were just introduced to the masses with a headline such as that. And then around the same time, Christopher Mellon made a comment about POTUS as it pertains to the UFO phenomenon and the investigation of it. He wrote, quote, "The importance of today's announcement from the White House that POTUS has ordered a whole-of-government approach to investigating and mitigating UAP can't be overstated. Congrats to Biden for finally giving this issue the attention it's long deserved." Unquote. Now again, remember, this is a psyop designed to slowly introduce people to these notions, to open the door a little bit in terms of planting in people's subconscious this kind of investigation into anomalous objects, even if for now we're saying there's something like Chinese balloons. But of course, we have other comments from other political leaders that are hinting at something more than that. And this is also part of the psyop, that we have different messages coming from across the political spectrum that are slowly raising the temperature. For instance, Senator Blumenthal said this of unidentified objects in the sky, quote, "The American people should be given more information. They're ready for it. They can handle it, and they need and deserve to know it," quote, unquote. And I said in my quote of that, "Notice the shifting language, more direct, pointing to something specific. Keep watching." And again, if this is just about Chinese balloons, why would he say the people should be given more information? They're ready for it. They can handle it. They need and deserve to know it. Why is that relevant if it's just about Chinese balloons? Again, I'm suggesting to you that something else is in play, something more dramatic, and that this introduces this into the consciousness of the populace at large. Now let's consider another headline, this time by Micah Hanks, who will also be speaking at that conference I'll be speaking about in Ohio in May. He wrote this for The Debrief. This is the headline. Quote, "Biden addresses unidentified objects amidst calls for greater transparency from lawmakers and scientists." Unquote. Again, think about that kind of headline. And as the average American, the average person around the world reads that kind of headline, it normalizes and legitimizes this topic for the masses. Now, think about what such messages suggest and what new possibilities are planted in the minds of the public who come across them. Again, even if at a mostly subconscious level. What I'm suggesting to you is that this all points towards an operation that one might describe, to use Grant Cameron's terminology, is something like managed disclosure. Now, of course, in addition to the general public, these kinds of messages are designed to awaken the interest of the media, supposedly another key component of any functioning democracy, with the aim that the stories they write also further crack open the door, further normalizing these matters in the minds of the public at large. In other words, as I wrote on social media, the carrots are dangling. Now it's a matter of how quickly the mainstream media takes the bait that's being willfully, if somewhat artfully, offered. I also wrote on social media, in Act Two, journalists need to start doing their jobs, digging beyond superficial statements, looking for inconsistencies between said statements and data, recognizing and asking deeper questions when incongruences appear between various official narratives, for instance, between senators and presidents, or between the Air Force and the Navy, things like that. Now, in regards to all of this, this is something else I wrote on social media this week pertaining to recent events. Don't mistake your assumptions about how disclosure will roll out for the reality. So far, things are proceeding as expected, including the nature of Biden's speech. Watch the overall narrative and the percentage of the population increasingly becoming acclimatized. Unquote. I also wrote, for those who have ears to hear, history repeats itself until it doesn't. Don't assume recent events are explainable and dismissible according to the actions of official channels in the past. And I also wrote, expect reported sightings to continue to increase, and not just because more people are bothering to look up. Again, I think part of the ongoing operation that is unfolding as we speak. I also wrote, quote, a key component of what's coming is a metaphysical shock to the collective system. Not only have the dominant physicalist assumptions about reality been wrong, but they've been incalculably damaging. That's key too. Again, think back to what I talked about with the raw material, the law of one material. When you reduce things to just their physical nature, you end up doing damage that you're not even calculating for. And that's been the case with our civilization, especially from the 20th century on. I also wrote, pertaining to this, quote, up until now, we've been like the kids from Lord of the Flies, left to our own devices. But the inequities in our civilization, the way we've treated the earth and each other, the way ego-driven power players have consistently hoarded resources, has not gone unnoticed. I also wrote, quote, humanity is not the only party with a vested interest in what happens here. Remember to keep that in mind when considering what actions by an alien superstructure are, quote-unquote, fair or not. Finally, I also said, if you're here for the nuts and bolts, or if you have a hard time seeing Earth as a living being, you may want to reconsider, and sooner than later. The cosmic calculus for the greater good involves much more than our present civilization, unquote. And again, there I'm speaking to what is considered fair or not, which parties are considered when the greater good is determined by this overarching superstructure. And again, what I'm referring to there also is that the Earth is a living being. This is not a question. This is true. And part of what's happened in our history is that the Earth has called out. The Gaia spirit has called out to the larger superstructure, complaining basically about the state of affairs with us on the planet, like an infestation of fleas, basically, that are not being cognizant of behavior and how it affects the whole. Keep that in mind, too. I also wrote this earlier this week. I said, I've asked this before, but it's worth posting again. How do you feel about being engineered versus being created? Might be a notion to get used to, just saying. But remember, ultimately, we're all facets of original mind, no matter how many iterations down the line we are, unquote. And just to be clear, what I'm referring to there is that this is really about perception more than reality. In some ways, engineering and creating are the same thing. But what I'm referring there is to religious believers who might have a notion of a certain kind of creation narrative and how they came to be. I'm saying that what if who we are, where we came from, is connected to an alien intelligence that engineered us in a way, but that in doing so, we still are part of the original mind. We are still ultimately derivations of original mind. In other words, aspects, fractal impressions of God. Even if alien intelligences were involved in the engineering of our physiological forms and of the history of our civilization. Now, something else I said. I know there's a lot to take in here, but I want to get through all of it. One of the things I said this week was that some of the historical suppression of the public and press interest in the UFO phenomenon is the result of a psychological operation of the phenomenon or elements of it. That's part of the complexity of the historical narrative. Importantly, this is now tipping in the other direction. In other words, there is a faction of the others now actively pushing for disclosure. This is one of the key changes in the dynamic around disclosure in our midst, and the most significant one by far. And obviously, in reference to these kinds of notions, the development of these current events, I wrote this past week. What a time to be alive, right here, right now. And some deep essential aspect of you chose this. Civilization-changing history is being made in our generation. And I really do believe that that is the case. And that will perhaps explain why I made a rather cryptic tweet at the beginning of the week, where I talked about, quote, picture gears long rusty starting to move, unquote. And here, of course, I mean not just gears within government and within elements of the so-called deep state, but also gears related to these non-human and non-conventionally human groups as well. And when one considers this turn in events, regardless of how and when exactly this plays out, there's really only one conclusion to come to. Buckle up, Dorothy, because Kansas is going bye-bye. And now I leave you with these concluding thoughts. People should both pay attention to the overarching narrative being woven regarding recent events to do with quote-unquote shot down UFOs/UAP, while also taking the details of the reports with a grain of salt. This approach will yield the greatest insight into the greater emerging picture. Because ultimately, one can both recognize that you're in the midst of a psyop while also engaging with it, parsing it in such a way that you can, as it were, reverse engineer the overall aim of the exercise. And when we do that here, in light of recent events, what I would suggest to you is that what it tells us is that we are in the midst of a changing of the guard, a turning of the historical page, if you will. And that is the result of a complex interaction of an array of agendas of factions of the so-called others, as well as the agendas of various factions in the know, as it were, within government and military intelligence circles. While there is still a push and pull dynamic in play here between these different factions, both human and non-human slash non-conventionally human, and this makes precise predictions or expectations around dates and timelines problematic, what this all seems to very likely point towards, ultimately, is the dawn of a new awareness for our civilization, a revelation involving the understanding that not only are we not alone in the cosmos, but that furthermore, who we are, where we come from, what our very origins are, is not at all what we've been taught. And as I said in response to a journalist who recently said to me, in conversation around these matters, that this will rewrite the history books, I said, absolutely, right back to the very beginning. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. And next week will be an OTC squared episode specifically for Patreon supporters. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.